seems like I've been having a good time so far. Yeah. Yeah.
You sleep good? Yeah.
No. Wow.
Have we fed you well?
Yes.
I'm Jackie Ryan. I am the Dream Center coordinator here at Next Level Church, and we are so excited that you're here with us this morning for our operations Q&A. So I am going to introduce one of my favorite people, and this is Pastor Ben Rath, and he is our executive operations manager.
Alan's in charge of HR, and he's nobody's favorite right. person, except on payday. Except on payday. Great.
Thank you.
Welcome, everybody. It's good to see everybody. Honestly, it's really good. You know what it's really good to see? It's really good to see some of you again. Yeah. It's good to see so many familiar faces. This is fun. I feel like we get to have this little mini family reunion within the family reunion, which is really, it really is super cool. So I hope last night was awesome for everybody. I hope the day of travel didn't wear you out. You were able to come in with open hearts and receive. I know Pastor Todd's word, Pastor Sarah's word, like really, really powerful. So hope you're as encouraged as I was. And so I'm excited about our time together today. I want to set this up a little bit. This breakout is mainly meant to be driven by you. So we've changed the format of these. This is a Q&A. So if you looked in your book, it said ministry Q&A. We're not going to ask you a lot of questions. We're hoping you'll ask us a lot of questions. So this is about you guys pulling from us. And so now that you know that you're actually on the spot to be prepared for this session and not me, then I'm going to give you a little bit of time. I'm going to kind of prime the pumps and get you guys thinking in a couple different directions so that you can be thinking of questions along the way. So write them down. We can go anywhere today. And honestly, the premise here isn't that we know best. The premise is that we know best. And so my hope is that even as we're feeling some of the questions, if you have thoughts and you want to jump onto somebody else's question and share some of your insight, that's where this will get rich, okay? So this is meant to be very, very conversational in that sense. So to let you know who's in the room with me, this is Alan Hughes. Alan is our Human Resources and Safety Director. He has joined our staff officially about a year ago, but Alan is a fixture at Next Level Church. He's been around for a long period of time. Some of you know my story as a previous church planter, and I was a part of the relational network back when it was the coaching organization. And I remember Alan being the guy that drove us from our hotel to the conference in the big white van. So that was the first time I met you, and you never took your sunglasses off. Very intimidating, very intimidating. But I assure you, he's gentle and harmless. And very funny. So hopefully he'll make us laugh a little bit. So human resources and safety are represented in the room. This is Christy Garrett sitting to my right. Christy is one of my favorite people on all of staff. And I say that not lightly. Christy is new to staff and she comes to us as our finance coordinator right now. It's kind of an administrative role in our finance team. And so she is also studying finance in school and is just a few credits away from graduating. So she is brilliant when it comes to financial systems and is just helping us really build up a lot of our financial systems, streamline some processes. So we have an amazing financial mind in the room to be able to help you think through your churches. And then leaning up against the desk over there is Ryan Gates. Ryan is our IT director, so all things information systems run through him. And then he is a lot like Alan in the sense that he's been around for a very long time in this house and in this church. And so he never ceases to amaze me with what he knows. We had a fire on the back of our building on Saturday, a junction box of 480 electric shorted in the water, and it was a whole thing, and it caught on fire, and it melted a box, and it was a real thing. Well, the first person here is Ryan, and Ryan knows where every breaker in the building is, what every piece of conduit, where it ultimately goes. So he's very bright as well, and not that you need to know anything about where our breakers are, but the point is that he has expertise in many areas, and some people are a jack of all trades and an expert in none. Ryan is a jack of all trades and an expert in many. So he'll be able to add value, hopefully, to your organizations well along the way. And so those are some of the primary functions of our team, HR and safety, finance, information systems. And then all the rest kind of falls my way. So all the legal stuff, all of our real estate, facilities is a part of our world too. And our facilities director is busy maintaining our facilities right now. So I'll partially try and represent that. Building and construction, that's us. Church metrics, data, analytics. That's a lot of my world and becoming an ever-increasing part of it. Policy development, that kind of is a shared thing between Alan and I. And then I sit on the board of directors, not as an official member, but as the staff representation to the board of directors, supporting Pastor Matt in that capacity and Pastor Sarah in that capacity. So when it comes to church governance, all things related to that, I kind of dabble in there too. So there's a whole bunch of different ways we can go during our time together. But here's the big premise, and here's why this matters. And I think you all know this. All of my red lanyard friends out there know this, that Sunday gets so much attention, and that is good. It is right and it is proper. But my goodness, don't Monday through Friday matter to the long-term success and stability of what Sunday can be. And I think that's the appreciation that we all probably corporately share for the roles that we play in our organization. So it doesn't matter to me if your church is 100 people and a month old, or if it's 1,000 people and 10 years old, or if you're 18 years old and 3,000 people like we are. It doesn't matter where you're at. This is bedrock type of stuff. If our churches are going to make it through the long haul, the stuff we're going to talk about today and that you guys are going to bring as questions and the discussion we have, I think we all just can admit that it matters so much, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. So here's what we're going to do. While you all are still thinking about where you want to go conversationally, we thought it would be fun to let you guys in on some of the things that we're thinking about. And so maybe that will get you thinking about it, if it impacts your organization, or perhaps you have great thoughts and you can help move us along or somebody else. So that's why Christy and Alan are up here with me, just to share some fresh thoughts on some of these different areas. So I'm going to let Alan share a little bit about human resources for a minute and some of the things that we're just starting to think about, some things that are coming up real time, some laws that are changing that are impacting the way that we're going to have to operate moving into 2020.
Okay, so one of the biggest things that is on my radar right now is December 31st, the minimum salary increases. So if you have people that are on salary, you're paying them in an exempt role, that minimum salary is going up. So back in 2004, when Friends was doing its last season, they set the minimum salary as $23,644. 15 years later, it has not changed. Mm-hmm. It's about to change. Now, 2 years ago, they tried to jump it up to $47,000. And the marketplace went, whoa, hold on, pump the brakes a little bit. That's a big jump. So there were some injunctions and things got rewritten. So now, as of January 1st, the minimum salary will be $35,568. Now, I don't know about some of you, but that does affect some of our people. Probably a little more than we would like it to. So we're starting to look at some of those roles. So as a tangent to that, we're reevaluating all of our roles as to whether or not they should be exempt or non-exempt roles.
Does everybody understand exempt, non-exempt language? Yeah?
Can you clarify?
Yes, we'd love to. Go ahead.
So when I say exempt and non-exempt, exempt roles are people that are salaried. You do not pay them overtime.
So the exemption means they're exempt from overtime requirements.
Right. Non-exempt would mean that you would pay them on an hourly basis, or you could pay them on a salary basis, but anything beyond 40 hours, you have to pay them overtime. So where that gets a lot of us into problems, there are qualifiers for whether a role can be exempt or non-exempt. Mm-hmm. In a perfect world, we could all go, we'll make them salary and we'll work them 60 hours a week and it'll be awesome, right? But we can't do that. There's laws. And so we have to, basically the way it works is every role is non-exempt unless they meet a qualifier. So those qualifiers have to be there. There are several different kinds of exemptions. There are professional, administrative,
creative.
Executive, creative, IT. There's a few in there that have exemptions. Where we sometimes paint ourselves into a corner is we try to get a little creative with, well, it's sort of got a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and we'll just call it exempt. And we have to be careful with that. So we're in the process of reevaluating a lot of our roles. A couple of things that we've run up against, one is the Department of Labor does not consider supervising volunteers as really a management thing. So even though you are over 100 volunteers, it's not management. If you had two part-time employees, now you're looking at something in a management role. But that's one thing that we run up against a lot. The other thing is, there's some language that should be in there if you're going to license someone as a pastor and make that part of their role. And we can't make everything a pastor. We facilities, maintenance, pastor just probably isn't going to fly if the Department of Labor comes in. So there's some language that we've run by our attorneys, they've signed off on, and so we insert that into any of the roles that we're considering to be pastors and exempt under the professional exemption. So if there's questions on those, I'll be happy to discuss some of those. Then are we talking about safety yet? Or?
So on the exempt, non-exempt thing, we'll pass it out in a little bit. But there's a flow chart that we use that really helps you to go through a determination for each role of where they land. And we didn't create it, so we're sharing it. But
you're saying that if you hire a secretary full time, right, that her secretary is $35,568.
If she were salaried. If she were exempt, now a secretary probably won't qualify as exempt. So that's actually the upshot of this is if you've got people that are in roles that you're not paying $35,000 and you don't want to bump them up to that, you should probably be looking at converting it to an hourly role.
Okay, so if it's a salary, then it's a minimum of $35,568.
Correct.
And if it's hourly, then the minimum wage rate applies, and you just manage the hours at that point.
And I'm still a little unclear on exempt. Exempt means people that are working just 40 hours, period?
No, exempt means they are exempt from overtime.
Mm-hmm. Exempt means no overtime.
So whether they work, and this is the other part that we have to watch too, if they're working 30 hours or they're working 60 hours, we're paying them the same amount of money. So if they have a week where they didn't work 40 hours, we may be taking vacation time, but we can't dock their pay. If they're truly salaried, then they're getting that minimum amount of pay. So that would be where we're talking about. If somebody that works past 40 hours is non-exempt, we have to pay them overtime.
So, but you can pay a part-time person's salary.
You can, but there is very little benefit in that.
Right.
Okay. So you're going to pay them a minimum. Again, the minimum salary has to be 35.5 or 35.6. So you're going to pay them a part-time. That would be under 30 hours a week. There's not much. At that point, I would say if you want to pay them $36,000, convert that to an hourly rate. And then pay them based on the hours.
So if you're paying a part-timer a salary, it has to be $35,000.
Correct. For them to qualify as non-exempt.
Okay.
Or exempt. As exempt, I'm sorry.
Right. So here's what we're doing. So this impacts all of us in different ways. And for us, so we have it's probably a $3 million labor budget, $3.2 million or something like that. So we are actually going through, and we have not historically dabbled into the non-exempt waters really at all. We've just brought everybody in as an exempt employee and then tempered the hours and tempered the salary accordingly. So we'd created some things that were helpful in us in a growing season to say this person's not quite full time, but we're really trying to demystify all those waters and really just follow the Department of Labor language. So we're going through every position. We've largely cleaned up a lot of the job descriptions and really made sure that we understand the work, because the work is what dictates your path through that flow chart to determine whether they're exempt or non-exempt. Once you've made that decision, the determination of an hourly rate or a salary is really the secondary question to me. So we're going through every position and considering what roles where need to be reclassified because they simply don't pass the Department of Labor's requirements for an exempt role, and we'll make those reclassifications. And then we're looking for other opportunities too where we could potentially do that, because this salary increase that's mandated in January is going to affect us. And so we're just kind of trying to solve it that way. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Good. Yes.
A little bit also, not quite. The on salary, we're growing. Of course, we have a few people part-time. We have some that are full-time. But what do you guys set? Like, is there a certain percentage-wise for budget for different positions? Or how are you setting budgets? Because we really haven't we haven't really faced that like we need to now. Now, obviously, it's just becoming an issue we need to sit and talk about. Do you have a set amount? Is there a certain percentage of your income in the budget?
Sure. Yep. So we've had... We are not bound in our governing documents to hold the certain percentages in terms of how much is for facilities and how much is for salaries, how much is for operating, how much is for missions. But we do have Pastor Matt and Pastor Sarah's heart that create those filters. And so we try and stay at 40% for salaries, no more than 40%. But, you know, it's really, I want to make sure you hear me when I say this. And as a church planner, I heard Pastor Chris Hodges teach one time their percentages for their budget, and he laid them out, and it felt so black and white. And I want you to know that unless governmentally you're in church governing documents, unless you're bound by those, it's never really plays out to be that clean and true. And here's what I'm saying. So we've been in a season now where we've been trying to build up staff. We've been adding staff for planned growth. We know we have a new location we want to launch in the first part of next year. We've got a dream center. So we have some young locations that needed to be bolstered up. So we're actually operating above that 40% threshold. But the goal is that at some point there's a tail that wags behind the investment and you start to see the return. So our goal is to be around 40. I think last year we were closer to 43%. And then this year, I'm not sure. I'm literally, when I left my desk, that's what I was working on with the labor budget. So,
question about that. When you say 40% of payroll, I think that's a good percentage. Does that include health insurance?
It's fully loaded.
It's everything. Yeah. Fully loaded. Okay.
Yeah. All of it. Yep. Good. So, and we can come back to this. So, ruminate on that. Like, let's go to a different topic. Let's change gears, get our minds thinking in a different direction. We'll come back. There's lots of time for discussion here. Take us into safety. Top of my thoughts.
So our big focus this year really is on our background checks. So out of the past 5 or 6 years, the number one reason the churches ended up in court was child sex abuse. Mm-hmm. Except for the last year, it slid to number two. So yay for that, progress, right? But it's a very serious thing. So we're looking more into our background checks. We've expanded our background checks. Traditionally, it was, okay, if you're working with kids, you get a background check, and our safety guys got background checks, and that's it. We are in the process of expanding it so that all volunteers, regardless of team, will be background checked. We've also included, with our Dream Center, they do the Adopt-A-Block outreach once a month. Any volunteers that we've got, basically anyone that is falling under our care and control, we want to have a background check. Because they become an extension of us. So we want to at least be able to say we have done our due diligence on that. If anything comes up, we now do a central review of it. Anything, all background checks come through me. And I review them and see, then I can look into how long ago was it, what were the circumstances around it. Sometimes I will go into the case records and find out what was the original thing. We had that happen recently. Where what the person actually pled guilty to was far removed from what they were actually charged with in the first place. If we went with what they were charged with, they would be a registered sex offender.
Right.
So we needed to know that. So you can't just look at the tail end and go, this is what they were convicted of, and assume that we know what happened. So you know, the centralized review is, I think, important for us.
Go ahead.
So, quick question. With the whole background check, how do you guys, like, systematically handle that? Like, say, for instance, someone is a sex offender compared to someone that smokes weed or someone that's child abuse. Like, you're doing a background check with your volunteers, and how do you guys, like, systematically handle that to say, like, hey, you were once charged for domestic violence, or you recently got something, like, how do you guys go about letting them search your process?
So, our big filter with that is always, we're a church. Okay, so that's our number one filter. Now, with the exception of registered sex offenders, they kind of go off on a different thing. We do not allow sex offenders to serve in any capacity. They can attend. Mm-hmm. We are happy to have them here. They just can't serve. Now, with the other ones, we look at a number of factors. What was the offense? How long ago was it? What were the circumstances around it? Some of that, it's kind of self-explanatory. Okay, yeah, 8 years ago, you know, you got, a misdemeanor amount of marijuana. We get that. Okay, it happened. 12 years ago, you got a DUI. Okay. If it's something more recent or it's something that is more serious, then we have a conversation with them. We just have a candid conversation and just ask them. We see where are they in their walk. Generally, whichever pastor is over that team, we'll just sit down and just have a very candid conversation with them and say, look, this is something that we're concerned about, and I'd really like to know more about it. And to me, honestly, a big part of it is, do they own it? The guy who 2 years ago had a domestic violence beef, if he owns it and he's like, man, I was just jacked up, I reacted badly, you know, I deserved this, you know, it happened and I was wrong. That guy is, I don't want to say he's going to earn my grace, but he's going to get it a lot quicker than the guy who's like, my wife was, you know, this and that, and puts it all off on her. That's the guy I'm going to start wondering, okay, has he really changed? So if that makes any sense,
so it's
to you.
Definitely, like, with that, you want to be able to look for people that's willing to take ownership for their mistakes.
That's huge. That's huge for me.
Well, and if we were together last year, I don't know who was in the breakout last year, but I shared some thoughts on the Bible in 1 Peter talks about how the devil is going around like a roaring lion. Mm-hmm. Well, I was in Africa once, and they say you can hear a lion roar 7 miles away. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, we are often thinking about, where's he roaring? And so when we hear stories in the news, when we like, look what he's doing, that's where we have our focus on. So Alan shares this all the time. There's a difference between safety and security. You'll feel secure in a prison, but would you feel safe spending the night there? So what we've got to do is we've got to put our attention on the areas where we're most likely to be attacked. And so, you know, you can sand a block of wood forever, and at some point there's diminishing returns. We're focusing our attention on where we hear the lion roaring. And so when it comes to things like registered sex offenders, that is a big deal. To Alan's point, statistically, is one of the number one things that is going to get your church in the headlines is something that happens there. And so where we see him moving, we use policy. And so we don't have policy for everything, but we have policy for things that are repeated that we want to safeguard ourselves from. And for us, policy creates boundary. Boundaries keep good things in and they keep bad things out. And so the good thing about a policy is that it takes the pastor out of it. Now there's a they who authorized the policy. I love you and I want to walk with you. But unfortunately, there's this policy and we have to follow it. So we use policy a lot too to help us. Go ahead.
Do you ever see, so like obviously, I mean, in a church sometimes it's challenging to get people to serve and volunteer just in general. And to push back from like, hey, we're doing a outreach to homeless and you're just trying to get people together. And they're like, but wait, before you come, I need you to go through this. So has there been pushback against the background checks for like volunteering opportunities and things like that, or you just don't care?
Well, the guy to answer that is sitting right here. Yeah, so Jared Rendon is our Dream Center director. So almost all of our inner city downtown Fort Myers outreach happens through the ministry that he leads. And this was something we instituted this year when we found out we had an issue come up where somebody was serving down there who had not been background checked, and it created a little bit of a moment on a Saturday morning. We've since gone to nobody gets signed up to serve unless they've been background checked. Jared can share how that's gone.
So I would say in the last 3 years we've had one particular lady who just said I won't serve if you background check me. And so she probably has nothing on her background, but she said it. She did it from a perspective of, I don't want my personal information out there. So I try to cover the gaps as much as I can. So if there's hesitation, let's talk about it. Why is there reservation? So if there is reservation, we do it usually through an online portal. But we can also print out the paper app. So if you feel more secure putting your personal information on this piece of paper that we're going to safeguard for you, we'll do that. So we try to talk through the challenges. In 3 years, probably background check hundreds of people, mm-hmm. And one has just not served because of it. But there is plenty of questions that come up with it. Just if you're willing to have that conversation with them.
Right. More often than not, people end up getting it when you go, look, we want to make sure that our kids, our students, yes, everyone they're safe.
Yep.
We don't want anything to harm them. Usually they're not going to go, Yeah, well, that's a dumb idea. Why would you want to do that? They'll usually fall in.
Yeah, I just think, awesome. I mean, my wife and I were trying to volunteer for something, and it was like the background check was like, okay, go down here and get fingerprinted. Do I mean, it was like so obtrusive that we were just like,
it was like,
I'm not going to do that.
There are certain things that require that, what they call a level 2 background check. We're doing just a records check and stuff.
So you do that internally. The first.
We use a vendor. We use a third party vendor.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you're not talking about fingerprinting?
No, we do not.
You don't go around all the time.
No.
Because that's not state requirement.
That's not state requirement, and it's really not. I wouldn't say it would be feasible for the literally hundreds of people we're going
to
talk about.
Pennsylvania has it all, like you have to be fingerprinted for
certain roles.
Right. So that's why I was curious about that, because that's a whole other conversation.
Now if you run a daycare as part of your church, you've got whole different requirements, and then you're starting into your level 2 backgrounds, that kind of thing. We're talking about just our volunteers.
Go ahead.
Do you background check only at the initial team sign-up, or is there an annual component?
Currently, there is not. In the next probably 6 to 8 weeks, we're changing our vendors, and it will automatically set it up to recheck them on a recurring basis.
You mind sharing your vendor?
Yes.
We are switching to Checker. So it's C-H-E-K-R. Or CKR. There's no E at the end of
it. Good luck finding it.
We're switching from it. We're currently using Secure Search. They're okay. Checker is just a lot more streamlined. The other thing, and so from an operational standpoint, with Secure Search, the people who are authorized to submit them also can see all of the results, and they can see the application. Mm-hmm. So that creates a little concern with us too, with people having access to personally identifying information. With Checker, the staff member will be able to just check the box, it sends it off to them, they never see it, it comes back to me.
Nice.
And so that myself and Ryan will be the only ones that have the access.
What's great about Checker is that it integrates with Planks on Online, CCB is, that's the reason why we're searching it, we use CCB as our database, and then in the next 4 weeks they'll be set up to integrate.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah, so for us, like kind of an operational thing, Planning Center Online has been used, that everything's streamlined. That's where our serving teams get notifications to serve. It's our database. We use it for background checks. We use it for resources, which is different rooms in the building. Mm-hmm. What else do we use it for?
Everything.
But it's cool, so.
Yeah,
it's
church.
Yeah, sorry.
Are you talking about Checker?
No.
So Planning Center Online, it integrates Checker in that. So whenever a volunteer signs up to serve, you already have their information. Now you can literally click it, send them a background check. It sends it back to us. Yeah. Then we can see.
And they're looking at integrating with more church management systems.
And there's a significant price difference between Checker.
Checker is cheaper than Church.
Wow.
There's also 3 levels. So we use Check. We use that. So the first level, like for volunteers, it's like $8. And then when we go to like hire somebody, we use the same system, and it's like $25, $27. So it does like a national search. So.
And that price will change by state.
Yeah.
That's good. What else? David.
Do you have a policy for known child molesters that are attending church?
We do. We last year we adopted a registered sex offenders policy because we had 4 instances of that in our organization, and we decided that we needed to establish a position on what we would and wouldn't allow with registered sex offenders to create a lot of consistency. And a big push for that was knowing what's coming with the Dream Center and only more and more involvement in that community. The number of registered sex offenders within 4 or 5 blocks of that facility is double digits. It's huge. So we didn't want to get into a situation where we were making rules at one place and not in another place. So we sat down, Pastor Matt, Pastor Sarah, myself, and we just worked to, by the way, your lead pastors have all of this in their hearts. Let me just say that. Like, I don't think this is up for us to figure out blindly. This is all in your lead pastor's heart. I think our job is to pull out of their hearts, because we don't want them to have to think about this all the time. But Pastor Matt and Pastor Sarah, they had a heart for what they wanted to do with this area. So we created a policy. We can share that policy with you. But the gist of it is that they can attend. They have to, assuming they've notified themselves, because otherwise how else would we know? But if they've notified us that they're attending, they have to have a conversation with the location pastor. They tell us what service they are and aren't, that they are attending, and that is their service. They don't get to float between services. They don't get to pick where they come in and out of the building. And so we highly restrict it. They're not allowed to serve anywhere. And they're allowed to participate in groups, because community is a big part of obviously our relationship with Jesus and growing. But even in that, it can't just be any group, and they have to kind of notify that group leader too, because if a group is happening in somebody's home, yeah. Well, we don't want to put somebody in a compromising position there. So there's a bunch of steps. With all of our policy, if policy enforcement comes into play, we try and make sure that that does not happen from an operational perspective, that it happens from a pastoring perspective. We want pastors to walk through people, because the enemy is going to try and there are people that God wants to touch their lives. He's healed them. They made a mistake or whatever. And we want them to receive all that God has for them. They have to understand that there are consequences. And we've had some pushback from that. Oh, yeah. But we could talk more about that offline. But there's been hard discussions, but some of them have been really good. But at the end of the day, the heart for the Pastor Matt and Pastor Sarah have is that there is a place where you can be a part of this family. Your role might just have to look a little bit different. And so we really try and walk really slowly with people. It is a lot of conversation.
You know, and an important caveat on that is it also protects them. Mm-hmm. That a perfect example, we had a guy who is a registered sex offender. This was prior to our policy going into effect. And we saw him walk into a small windowless room with a teenage girl. He was showing her where something was. That's all he was doing. But that door closed behind him, and he has no defense at that point. If she came out and said anything happened in there, everyone would believe her.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So in this case, by restricting where they can go, it's areas that are typically, we have camera coverage in, they're well lit, they are well attended, they're open in the public, that protects them. It doesn't put them in a position where something can be said. And we explain that to them when we have that interview. We're like, look, this is looking out for you too.
Yeah.
And most of them have accepted that and understood that.
I love to tell people in these conversations, and even when we were trying to teach our location pastors how to have these types of conversations, tell them this isn't about trust between me and you. We trust you. I just don't trust the enemy. And the enemy will do anything to try and break down the movement of God through this church. And so in that creates an understanding. Like, if they're really bought into the vision of the church and what's at stake and what's at play, you'll see the hardness of their heart start to soften, and you'll know right away their level of openness for the conversation.
What's the number one reason now that it's number two?
What was the last one? Property disputes in 2016.
Property disputes.
It's
good. Go ahead.
Well, that was for that year.
What about people who are not registered sex offenders, but they come across as really creepy and can't really actually do anything?
Sure.
It's like this awkward.
So just a top of mind thought. My background is I was an operations and management consultant in retail. And so I worked with a lot of big companies. And one of the things that we worked with was we worked with our loss prevention teams at times. And one of the most fascinating things I learned about loss prevention was that the closer that you get an employee to somebody who looks suspicious, the quicker they are to leave, or they're just going to continue to do their honest thing. So what we do is we just get close to those people.
Yeah.
Anybody who makes us a little bit uncomfortable, whether it's a complete stranger on a Saturday night and somebody from Alan's team notices they got a backpack and sunglasses and a beanie cap, and I don't know if they're like a hipster or a terrorist. And so what Alan's team does is they just get really cozy with them. And sometimes we'll even engage in conversation with them and see what their response is. And so that's at that's the most extreme. That's like a total stranger, first time visitor on a weekend during services. But you know, that we can have measures of that even as they somebody's been around for a while, like somebody just randomly shows up, starts to come to a group or whatever. Same thing. I just think you have to just run towards that which makes you feel uncomfortable. Yeah. And I think the closer you get to it, you're going to learn a lot about that person.
Yeah. We had someone just, well, we've had more than one just like that. And so we decided to set boundaries and see if they would follow under those boundaries, how they would actually, you know, get in line with leadership and see what they would do. And when they didn't consistently didn't do that, we legally had them removed. Mm-hmm. It got to that point. There was no sex offender record, mm-hmm. but we found that, you know, you would find them in a room with a girl, you know, in the break room, and there's no one else in there. And this particular person was standing at the door, so they couldn't get out.
So we had the same thing. We had the same thing last year. We had a gentleman who was... If you read about child predator grooming behaviors, I looked at security footage for weekend after weekend of what this guy was doing, and he had no record. In fact, he'd been background checked. He was serving in kids ministry, but it just made us really uncomfortable. And the second we approached him with our discomfort, he bowed up. He got real righteously indignant. Mm-hmm. Man, another church is doing this to me. And I'm like,
that's exactly
if everybody's pointing this out, maybe I'm not the problem. And so in that case, we said, look, we can tell you're upset by this conversation. This hurts you. We understand that. It's probably not the right season for you to be serving, but we would love to walk with you with whatever this is that we all just experienced with how you came up. Would you just take the season off? We want to walk with you through this. I think we invited him to be a part of a freedom group. And he did that for a week, had one meeting with the pastor, and eventually bowed out. And so whether there was something there that we prevented or whether there's just hurt in his heart that he's not able to get over, I don't know. But we have to be really careful what we are and aren't responsible for in people's lives. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we are responsible for protecting this place. I mean, this is all under the banner of safety.
So background checks, 90%. Just 90%. Of molesters will not show up.
That's right.
Check. Yeah. They simply haven't been caught yet. Yeah. So that should make you feel really warm.
So why are we doing background checks?
We are still doing them because, one, it is expected. Right. Two, it is a tool that's available, and we need to utilize every tool that we can have.
Yep. Yeah.
And then it all comes back to, we need to make sure that especially our staff that work in kids, our high-level volunteers, that they know what behavior that they should be looking for and be able to recognize it and know who to tell about it. Mm-hmm. That is important. We can't emphasize it enough. And also give them the freedom to be suspicious of anyone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We always say that if it's suspicious for someone, it's suspicious for everyone. Mm-hmm. So if it doesn't matter if it's a staff member, it doesn't matter if it's another volunteer. It doesn't matter that they've attended this church for 30 years. We shouldn't just dismiss behavior because, well, that's just Bob and that's the way Bob is. No, right. Bob's being a creeper. Okay, right. So let's call it what it is.
Yeah. Good. Any other thoughts on the safety stuff, or do we want to switch gears to talk money?
I'm new to more of the operations part. So obviously there's a lot of stuff that I don't know, but I don't know what I don't know until I come up on it. And so is it possible for you guys, say I'd have to come back in another time, obviously not something like this, but just to really go through some things with you guys as far as what to look out for and just your operations things, is that something that's possible? That's
absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that would be the open invite at the end of this conversation is, gosh, as a part of the, like, we're family. We want to, whatever, I think Pastor Matt and Pastor Sarah said it, whatever we have to offer, we'd love to offer. The best way to make that happen is Jackie Ryan on your way out, who introduced us, just give her your name, or she will give, you know what she'll do? She'll give you Danielle, my assistant's email, and then email Danielle with whatever your question is, and it'll get routed to the right one of us.
Okay.
David?
Just a matter of property disputes is the number one reason for your suits. Would you just briefly explain what brings about property disputes in the church?
That would probably be more you.
Yeah. I haven't been a part of one, so I'm not sure.
Would it have to do with not doing business as is stated in your Constitution and bylaws, or preamble, zoning laws?
I honestly do not know that. So the statistic that I shared came from the Church Law and Tax Institute.
Richard Hammer?
Yes. So it came from them.
Denominationally, because I know some
that's a good point.
Like to own the property, and when people want churches want to leave it, there's a dispute over who gets that building. I've seen that a lot.
I've seen that too.
And Philadelphia is trying to fight like any church. Any church has a school is no longer tax exempt. And so now the property tax laws all over the place.
Yeah, that makes sense too. All right, good. Let's grab the steering wheel. Let's go another direction for a minute. There's a lot, and I know we're going to save 25 minutes here at the end. But Christy, give us some just top of mind thoughts. Where are we spending our energy focused on from the finance department area?
Currently, we are spending a lot of time on internal controls, how we're handling our cash funds, electronic funds, just at a deeper level. So every year we submit ourselves to a financial audit. Just Pastor Matt and Sarah want to make sure that we're being accountable and stewarding correctly. So recently, 2017's audit presented several internal controls that we definitely needed to rein in. And it's just around things that we would have never thought about because we are a church and we trust each other and we just trust our operations. We trust, the people that are here, which is a great thing. But there's always temptation for people to take advantage or just things to slip through the cracks. And so one of the biggest things was just in handling cash itself. I don't know how many times before I sat in the seat that I would come in and see Christian, who previously sat in the seat, and there would just be cash sitting on her desk. And she didn't know where it came from. Sometimes she would, sometimes she wouldn't. And it's just that trust that's there. But we also don't know who else could have come in and just taken the funds or whatnot. So we've now put in different things into place. I have a deposit box where people sign, like how much they put it, where it's going, including the mail that comes in. You don't think about, like, we need to log all the checks that come in the mail or how much cash comes with tithe envelopes. And it's not anything that I would have thought about in that, like in this realm, because we trust ourselves. But it's that I have 10 plus years in banking. And every time that you take the checks out of the deposit bags, every time that you do it out of the night drop, you log every check, two people initial off on it. And it's just standard in case somebody's like, hey, I sent a check and it cleared in somebody else's bank account and it wasn't ours. Like, how did it get there?
Yeah.
So things that just came to light that we really didn't think that we needed to do, but it is just that. And it's protecting me. It's protecting whoever is handling those envelopes. That could be at blame, though they never did anything. So we've been putting into place a lot of things that are dual control, and two people have to be there for when the mail is open. Two people have to go to the mailbox, or we watch each other go to the mailbox. Just different things that allow for accountability and for us to know, like, we are stewarding this correctly. And then just oversight. Because we have a lot of volunteers. Like, most of our stuff is volunteer-based. You're one person, I'm one person. A lot of churches only have one finance person or an operations person who handles, like, so many things. So just having somebody that is able to view our reconciliation every month, asking different department heads to review credit card transactions for their teams and holding those accountable. Credit card is like the biggest area. Our accountant shared when he was here with the audit that he just had two churches that executive members of their team had been using the card for personal decor in their house and different things. And the lead pastor was the only one who reviewed this. Mm-hmm. And he trusted them. He was like, I know who they are. And finally, it took him like 3 or 4 months to realize it's $20,000 that's gone. And now you have to ask your friends to, like, you've been with this person for so long that you trust it. So we've now put into place where supervisors review their team members' credit card purchases. I review them. There are multiple steps so that we have accountability on that part. It also just helps for better budgeting at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story for us on that is we've learned if only one person sees it, that's not enough people.
Right. And that is our biggest. Just having more people's eyes on things help to ensure that processes are done correctly and that we catch any mistakes or any fraud or any way for us to take a loss and then be held accountable to our congregation or to the community. Because finances in church is a hot topic on a regular basis. So we just don't need to expose ourselves to any of that.
Yeah.
And so it's just having multiple people to say, no, we do do this correctly. We do monitor, and when a mistake happens, we catch it quickly.
If I could just kind of jump in, I just have a thought. If your lead pastor was in the room, and I'm assuming a lot of us have fiduciary responsibility, fiscal responsibilities within our organization, here's what I would tell them. I would tell them that nobody that I've ever talked to who had money embezzled out of the organization ever thought that the person would do it.
Right.
Because if you thought that the person would do it, you wouldn't have hired him in the first place. So again, I trust you like crazy. I trust you like crazy, but I don't trust the enemy. And I think Jesus is so clear about what money in our heart and how connected they are. I think that if the enemy is going to try and destroy and our churches, there's such a high likelihood that it's going to have to do with money.
Yeah.
And we actually can't take this serious enough.
Right.
I just lived through this on the back end, not in a church world, but man, before I came here, I was working for a consulting company that my friend had started. Huge company. They're going to do $25 million in business this year alone. The accountant that I sent my expense reports to had a credit card account opened. There was only a few cardholders in the organization. Everybody else used their personal cards and got reimbursed. And the owner asked this accountant for the password to the account because he wanted to go in and redeem some points for something. And she's like, well, just tell me what you want. I'll do it. Tell me what you want. I'll do it. And he's like, no, no, no. And he was actually, I think, trying to buy company gifts for people, and he wanted to surprise her. And so she kept resisting giving him the password. Finally, her next text back, he's like, just give me the password. And she responded back and she said, here it is. I want you to know I'm not a bad person. I just made a mistake. And he's like, what are you talking about? And they got into the account. And over the course of the past 5 years, she's taken $500,000 from them. And it was completely lost in a $20 million organization. $500,000 it's not, we're not talking about $5. We're not talking about $50,000. We're talking about $500,000. This is a person I know. I know the owner. I know this woman. I've interacted with both of them. You would look at her and she's your sweet aunt who would make you apple pie. I'm just saying that the temptation is so great. If your lead pastor was here, I would tell them to sit down with you and ask who knows what and what do they see along the way. And anytime there's only one person who has control of any part of the purse strings, I would find a way to add dual control.
It's called slippery slope with no accountability.
Well, and that's exactly so the FBI got involved in this case back in Pittsburgh, and because it's a huge crime. And so that's exactly what they said. It starts off with one. You know what the first thing she bought was? Her daughter's husband had a landscaping business, and it was a tough season because it had rained, but it was drying out, but he didn't have cash flow. She bought him one tank of gas for his lawnmower so he could get back in business. It's led to $500,000. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just, from a heart level, I want you to know that. And I want you to champion that with your pastors. I want you to take them back, and I want you to invite them in. I have an open book policy. I try and present more to Pastor Matt and Pastor Sarah than they. They're like, I trust you.
Yeah.
I just don't trust the enemy, guys, and I just want this story after story. They never would have guessed this person would have done this. I am constantly putting information in front of them. When we go through the board packet every month, it includes a budget versus actuals report, and it has a balance sheet as well. And so it has the account balances for all of our bank accounts. That, to me, is a step because she prepares all that and there's accountability the whole way through there. The very next thing I do is I open up our bank accounts online and I show them. Like, I am constantly trying to show them that I know where every penny is at. I think that matters.
Do y'all require when staff use a church credit card that not just a statement, but they have the receipt?
We do for over $75. So anything under $75, they're not required to have a receipt. But we have recently, with the supervisor process added into it, full descriptions have to be met. And so we are implementing that. We follow the IRS's guidelines for meals, including the documentation. So how long was your meal? Who did you go with? What was the purpose? And all of that has to be in the description. Yeah. So if you're not providing a description, we've recently had a pastor come to me and ask, what are all these meals for? And I'm like, I don't know. So he's been having to sit down and just have that conversation with that person.
Yeah.
And it's one of those that when you're not looking, they add up quickly. So it just also leads to their understanding of, I need to now be accountable. I can't, whenever we're requiring these descriptions. On the other end, for all of them, it's better for their budget when they want to look at their actual detailed budget. Yeah. Where did they spend their money? Because you don't know where why you went to Target in February.
Right.
Like, I can't remember what I did in February.
The spiritual principle here is stewardship.
Yep.
And if you read Matthew and Jesus and the parable of the talents, it says that he gave five, two, and one. I just preached this. Five, two, and one.
Yes, you did.
And thank you. Help me if I butcher this. But then it says that he gave to each according to their abilities. Mm-hmm. Apparently, our ability with finances has everything to do with our aptitude in finances. In other words, God's not going to give you more than you can faithfully steward and trust. Yep. And that's why we take this stuff so seriously. This is not about micromanaging. This is not even about a lack of trust. This is about demonstrating stewardship. Because the principle of stewardship is at play, whether you want to believe it or not. And so when it comes to finances, everywhere we go, we're trying to just continue to never talk finances, financial policy, rules, regulations, budgeting from any other standpoint than spiritual stewardship. Because it's a heart matter. It is not a black, it is not a numbers matter. It's not a bookkeeping issue. It's not an administrative function. It is deeply connected to the heart of ministry. And I think for our role, if there's anything we probably wrestle with as a team, and if I'm projecting, you guys correct me, but for me, where I sit, every day I have to remind myself, how does what I do actually ministry? And it's because of the stewardship, whether it's stewardship of our staff, whether it's the stewardship of safety, whether it's the stewardship of our facilities, whether it's the stewardship of finances, it is all stewardship. So everything we do, Red Lanyards, It is deeply spiritual, though it may not appear on the surface. It is all tied to stewardship.
I just thanks guys for sharing everything, and I'm just wondering, like, what have been the most impactful system tools or models that you've been implementing with growth, especially from a financial perspective of the stewardship? So I'm really interested.
Take us into that, Christy, because we've done some stuff.
Right.
We've done some stuff.
Thank you.
A lot of what came out of the internal controls was that we needed to add steps, and still being so limited, finding the resources that would help us do that with I'm part-time, he's in and out of the office, and then just being able to add an extra layer of oversight. And so we've implemented a accounts payable processor, AnyBill, that allows for bills to come in. It's amazing because actually the vendor can send in the invoice. And
what's
then
it called again?
AnyBill.
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 Is this similar to like a bill.com type situation?
Same idea, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're
probably competitors.
Yeah. Okay,
cool. We bid it out to five different vendors. So yeah.
AnyBill.com. Here's what we found out when we did this, when we went out and got bids for an AP system, that we could outsource this, make it more efficient, and spend less money. When it came down to the printed hard cost of checks and signatures and mail and all that, it's done cheaper through there, and we have a heightened level of control.
That's cool.
Yep. So that's been a big deal. And then
I want it all. Keep going. Keep going. We're here to listen.
We're looking to some stuff like this, but the problem that we ran into was with our
contractors,
we couldn't send them 1099 individually. Do they do that, or they send out all
they
that?
Do.
Oh, wow.
It's an additional, I think, like 50 cents or $5 for every 1099, but they'll actually track it through the year. You just have to put in the, and there's a client side and a vendor side, and so the vendor can actually go in and submit their W-2, W-4, and put that in there. And then they'll track, like, every time you pay them, just make sure it's marked that they're a 1099, and they'll send them out at the end of the year and take care of all of that for you, all of the...
Does it work with QuickBooks or so it's just
yeah, we use QuickBooks online. Yeah.
Okay.
So all of our Ryan has been amazing at finding all of the systems that we use communicate with QuickBooks. Otherwise, I don't think I could be part-time or be sane at this moment. And so we use Expensify for our credit cards for expense reports, and our bank communicates directly with Expensify. They get to go in and classify their expenses on the lines. Supervisor.
Expensify talks to QuickBooks, so our general ledger from our budget ties in to Expensify, so they can tie it right to the rate account.
And in that same system, that's where the supervisors get to view every transaction. They get to review the ones that it also holds the receipts, so you just take a picture of your receipt, so your supervisor gets to see that, gets the description, and then now we have that extra layer.
So our financial systems, we use QuickBooks Online, Expensify, AnyBill, And then we personally, we bank with Chase. We were with a local bank. We went with Chase just, again, from a technology standpoint, looking for integration. Here's what that's meant for us. So, again, I know all of our organizations are different size, but our end-of-month reconciliation process, even a year ago when you guys were here, it would have taken us a week and a half with a couple of volunteers. At that point, the person sitting in her seat was here in a full-time position, so highly focused on that. We do reconciliation now in about 7 hours across the day because we've involved others. We've added controls. We're not getting bad expenses, badly coded expenses coming through. We don't get bad expense reports anymore. And then the integration is eliminated a lot of duplicate data entry.
What are the churches using for e-pay, for tithing and stuff like that? Because I know we're paying a lot of money back to the system.
Brian, speak to where we're at and where we're going from online giving.
So currently we use BluePay as our payment processor. They work with CCB, who's our church management system. It's hard because every church management system has a certain set of payment processors. So really what you have to do is ask your church management system, whether it be Planning Center, CCB, Fellowship One, what payment processor they work with, and really take an Excel sheet and compare them and see what's best. Currently, CCB is moving to an internal. They're actually going to become a payment processor and reduce all the fees, and so we won't have any fees really outside of it's like 20 cents a transaction.
Yep.
Can you just clarify, you said CCB and you said Planning Center. You use both of these in some capacity?
Well, no, what I'm saying is, I'm just naming examples.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But you said data management system. Capacity, because our worship, we have CCB, which I am so surprised you used that, and would love to hear more about that, but we end up having more software management systems than we need because they actually do the same thing.
Yeah. Currently only, so we just, when they rolled out the voluntary management, we actually stripped everybody but worship and production from PCO. And this year, once they finish rehearsal mix and CCB service lab, we will transition worship and production off of PCO
So good. So talk to Ryan and keep that conversation going. Philosophically, here there's two ways Ryan, you can make this better, but when it comes to software applications, there's two mindsets, and I learned this in the business world. You can either take a best of breed approach or you can take a cornerstone system approach. The best of breed is I'm going to pick the best person for creative, whatever they need to do their thing, but then if the discipleship team needs something different for their groups, then we'll pick that best one. But if finance needs something different, and you end up inevitably having a bunch of systems to maintain that don't talk, and you actually can't manage your organization the right way. So we are, from a philosophical standpoint, 2 years ago, we went to a cornerstone approach. We're going to get in a relationship with CCB, and we're going to be a part of that conversation. And you have to know where your vendors are going, but CCB is the end game for us. We're going to try and live everything there. We're pulling back checks in there. Like, we're going to pull application. We're going to prefer applications that have tight, seamless integration with CCB over that because of the heartache of managing it otherwise. Matt.
So CCB versus PCO, what's like the pros and cons? Just a quick.
I'll send you a spreadsheet.
We've been using Planning Center for 4 years since the church started, and we have everything on there. It works great for us. I don't want to be that church that's like has the archaic system because we didn't like it.
So here's the deal. Technology today, we're all at risk of being using the archaic system. Here's what I would say. You have to find the system that supports the way you want to do ministry, because here's where you get it wrong. When you buy a system because they have the best marketing or NewSpring uses them or Elevation uses them, you end up being a slave to that system in the sense of it's going to reshape the way you have to do ministry. And so for us, we are constantly, we don't ask the question of how do we do this in your system? We say, this is what we want to be able to do. Can you do it this way? And so even just when you're going through an RFP process looking for solutions, do not let your solutions shape the way you do ministry to the degree that you can. That's extreme. But
so we're growing as a church, and we're getting into buying our first building. And obviously the trustee board makes decisions based financially. But like everybody obviously wants everything. They want the best like lighting system, the best, this. We want to do an add-on to the building. As you guys grow and get new facilities, how do you manage the trustee board that makes decisions, you know, not emotionally, but like, you know, financially, but then the budget, but like, hey, there's an actual budget, and financial P&L management, what good, like my wife and I are business owners outside of the church. And I'm saying like, we will look at revenue forecasts and like, hey, here's this, what's going. And then board, I'm not saying our board does this, but like makes decisions based upon what, like, hey,
there's
new shiny
numbers, like,
correct,
right?
Yeah,
right.
Like,
right, there's faith and there's facts.
Exactly.
So how do you guys manage that? I know that's a tough question to kind of like what I'm asking, but like,
anything I would say in the next 30 seconds before our time's up would be a gross oversimplification of the reality of how it plays out. But here's what I don't mean that in a bad way. We're very fortunate in the sense that Pastor Matt and Pastor Sarah, that heart of stewardship, I didn't have to put that in here. It's in them.
Right. Right.
And so those conversations are generally much, much easier. I think it all starts with the budget. And for us, we don't budget based off of forecasted growth. We don't budget to spend a dime more than we actually brought in last year. And so automatically, in a growing environment, that's going to create some operating margin. And with operating margin, so let's say that we're over on income and under expenses, and that creates, like, let's say, like right now, we're probably like a 7.5% operating margin, income and expenses. Then as an executive leadership team, sure, there's endless ideas of, I want a new LED wall, and let's put some in the ceiling, if I had to pick an illustration. And so, but in that, we sit down as a leadership team, and those would be unbudgeted expenses. So we sort through them. Here's the cost. Here's the proposals. Pastor Lewis brings potentially the LED wall to the table, and it has a price tag associated with it, and we put that up against the new flooring that needs to be replaced or the roof at the wherever that's leaking. And we sit down as a leadership team and we make those decisions. And then because they're unbudgeted over a certain dollar threshold, we then take those back to the board and we say, we're operating with this kind of margin. We have this money available to us. We have this need. The leadership team would like to submit this spend, this expenditure. And so that's kind of the process by which we go through it. In the short term, some of your question leaned more towards a little bit long range, more planning. And I think that's just a discussion probably for a different space. Okay, one more and then we're out of time.
I'm so glad. I had this question since the very beginning. Okay, so I'm new to this role, and this is a non-existing position.
What church are you with?
I'm with City Life.
Oh, Pastor Brad. Great. Yeah. Okay.
So I came into the role that 7-8 months ago, and all of the hats that you've been talking about are now on my head. And so I've just been really, it's great because it's taken so much off of Pastor Brad, and that's what I want to do. But I also see the need to, we're not in a place to hire additional people. Some of it, we're not in a place to even outsource it. And I feel like there needs to be a team. And I see it being a volunteer team, but I'm curious if A, you do that, how many you do that with, and what is your process because of this sensitivity of so much of the information.
Sure.
So I want to raise up an operations team.
Sure.
That's like in my heart.
It's really good.
And really empower. We have brilliant minds in our church that I think we're not tapping into in this way. But what are, if you do that, what are some of the measures that you're trying to do?
Good. So we do it where it's appropriate. So we have volunteers that do support some of the end of month reconciliation process. All of our count team is volunteer led with a staff present. So that's a place we have volunteers in. And then probably the newest team that I'm looking to build right now is with regards to real estate and land issues and development and construction. We don't have any expertise on staff. We have a lot of expertise in the house, but they're all so busy. The guy that I lean on has a $150 or $200 million project in Tallahassee he's leading, so he's a little tied up, but his heart's in this house. But there's four guys that we're getting together because those projects are just kind of a little bit out of my league. And so we're starting a team there. But man, I'm a huge fan. I think Paul had it right when he talks about what the role of fivefold ministry is, and it's to equip the ministry for the work, equip the saints for the work of the ministry. And so that is just the heart of this house, wherever we can and whenever appropriate.
And how do you, when it comes to things like with your facilities, I know that person's not here, but with you know, the herd went to the bathroom and then 15 minutes later I saw them cleaning it. Mm-hmm. Are those volunteer-based? Do you hire your custodial staff? What does that look like? And is that different across your campuses?
No, it's the same across all the locations. Okay. We have all of our facility staff. There's no facility staff members at the locations right now, no paid staff. So anything there is volunteer. We have two facilities team members who are paid staff centrally, and they're thinking about the biggest picture issues with regards to facilities maintenance and upkeep. They manage all of our cleaning contracts and things like that. But if there's little projects that need to go on, that's all volunteer led. Weekend services, that's all volunteer led. So volunteer facilities teams there.
So what you're saying this week is volunteers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have somebody come in and clean like twice a week?
Yep, we have every Friday night cleaning crews come in and get this property ready for Saturday night services. They come again and do kind of a light clean Saturday night, I think.
Sunday,
I'm sorry, after the weekend. They get it ready for the upcoming week. And our East location only has Sunday services. They come in on Saturday and do that cleaning. Yeah. And then this week, obviously, we have them in here every night after y'all leave. Not that y'all are messy. I don't mean like that. I just mean there's a lot of you. That's all. That's all.
Yeah. And our cleaning crew is hired. It's somebody that we contract.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Well, this has been fun. Here's what I imagine. I imagine there's a lot more thoughts and questions. So here's the promise. Here's our heart. I hope you hear this. This was really meant. The reason why these ministry Q&As were the first non-main session of our time together here is so that this conversation can keep going in a one-on-one way. So I know my team is fully available. You'll see Alan around. If he doesn't seem like he's answering your question, it's because he's on his other assignment, which is just being with security on that side of things. But Christy will be in and out and floating around. Ryan will be running lights during main session, but he'll be bouncing around too. I'm available. And whether we get together during the rest of our time here over a meal, meeting in my office, whatever, like we can make all that work out. But also, we're just available is the point. So make sure that you get Jackie. Stop by Jackie. She can give you my assistant's email address. If you think there's something that we need to set up some time for, you have specific questions, we would love to. Yeah, how about we just do it that way? That's, so you don't have to write it down 100 times. You're so smart. Look at me. My assistant's name.
You got it.
That's good.
Here you go. I'm Lauren, which means I even do more than just this.
Yeah, that's right. That's good. So her name is Danielle. Her email address is Danielle, DanieLLE, dot Carter, CARTER. Danielle.Carter at nextlevelchurch.com. And if you just email her and say, hey, I was in Pastor Ben's breakout and I have questions or I need some to talk to somebody about this subject, she'll route it throughout our team. She kind of plays traffic controller for our whole department. Okay?
Yeah.
Hey, we love you guys. Let us know how we can help.